Everything is sparkly.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Core. This is Core, where we talk about video games. And it's just me and Bo today. Scott Johnson here, Bo Schwartz there. Hi, Bo. Good morning. Afternoon.
Evening. Hello, Scott.
Hi. No John today. He's out.
It feels weird in here. We've done how many of these? 179
yep.
of these?
Yep. I think we've done one
all
other.
Featured John.
Wait a minute. Didn't we do one other one that was just me and you or me and John? I don't remember now.
Could be.
Yeah. I thought there was one other episode where I was there, but it was only one of you. And so we're doing it again. John has responsibilities this week. He's been tasked with great honor and I don't know. I can't think of another word, but he's got to watch a house and some dogs. So he's there watching them, keeping an eye very closely on those dogs. Can't let those dogs get out of hand, right?
When you say it out loud, it sounds like a really bad reason to miss the show. That's like the kind of reason I'm like, oh, why did you call in sick for work? Well, I had some dogs to watch.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Yeah. I know he has a good reason. We're just making fun.
No, it's pretty funny because I think also part of it is if he had a microphone there, the dogs get real loud, like they'll bark. Oh. And he didn't want to, you know, cause any problems that way, which I totally get. I'm moving us to the central server. Hold on a second. There we go. Oh,
I moved.
It may not matter, but I meant to do it before the show started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Core. We're going to talk about cool stuff. And then later today, or that is to say tonight, after we finish the show, we're going to play Heroes of the Storm. You're thinking, well, wait, I thought John couldn't come. Well, he still can't and won't. But Tyler Lansdowne will. Who's he? Oh, I don't know. Just a cool guy that works over there at NetherRealm. Helped put together that their Mortal Kombat 11. And is a great community manager over there. And he's going to be with us tonight. Playing Heroes with me, you, Kristen, and Kyle. And
it's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. We've been trying to do this forever with that guy. So finally, fruition, as the kids say.
It's the podcast crossover everyone wanted. I've seen him on the official NetherRealm Combat cast with a K. The cast is with a K.
Yeah.
Everything's with a K with Mortal Kombat.
How was he over there? He was good on that?
Oh, yeah. It's a great little show. If you like the Mortal Kombat, they explain how to play the game, which is kind of nice because it's actually quite hard.
Yeah. There's stuff to do in that game that you should do to improve your play. But here we are. We're going to do this. We're going to get right into it, too, and talk about what I think is the big news. Now, I don't know. Maybe you'll disagree with me, and maybe there are other people out there that are like, whatever, Scott. This is not that big a deal. Who cares? The first two weren't all that great. Second was a lot better than the first, but who cares about a game called Watch Dogs? And I introduce it with this. We now have a confirmed leaked reveal from Ubisoft that Watch Dogs Legion. So it's Watch Dogs : Legion has been confirmed and a reveal coming at E3 2019. This is following a retail leak. Ubisoft officially confirmed what is likely to be one of its bigger upcoming surprises, Watch Dogs Legion. The Twitter account came to life following the recent leak and basically confirmed everything that everybody had been saying, like it's set in London, as well as this assumption that it will be shown at E3, but also this. Okay, here's where it gets interesting. Did you play Watch Dogs 1 or 2?
I've thoroughly played Watch Dogs 1, okay. Never touched 2.
All right, 2, I played 1 as well. I think 2 was the better game. But I also preferred the tone, the darker tone of 1. 2 is a little goofy.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. But I like the gameplay better. This will likely return to that tone a little bit. This is all set in a post-Brexit UK or Britain, that is, London. Mm-hmm. And here's the big thing that sets it apart. And they say that this game's been delayed multiple times internally because of this, because it's very ambitious. But this is what we know. Supposedly, it's rumored that you've got a main character in the game, but throughout the game, you can be anybody you want in that world. And everybody in that world, every NPC you see, can be taken over by you, and you can play them, and they will have their own voice actor work, they'll have their own animations, they'll have all their own stuff as if they were the main protagonist. Now, what that probably means is there's like 10, is my thinking, 10 sets, like male voice number 2 to male voice number 8, or whatever. There's probably, it can't be that quite that granular, is my thinking. They may have figured out a way to do it. Maybe it's procedurally generated voice work from a computer.
I think you're onto something.
Right. But it still sounds pretty rad, and then it makes the word or the name sound like it means something when you say Legion. You know, we are Legion. Here's all these guys that can hack everything. And if it's a return to that kind of subversive story, and they actually want to have something to say here, there's like an opportunity for all of that, and it could be really rad. You've said on the show previously, you're not really open world guy.
No, that's why I didn't play 2.
Right. Because you were like,
I played 1 and enjoyed it, but had my, I was like, I'm not, another city, man. Forget it.
Right.
Like, I like hacker games and cyberpunk sort of stuff. It's up my alley, but just the idea of playing another open world, I didn't really care for it. Watch Dogs 1, it felt, that's a good example of a game where the open world is superfluous to, you know, it's just drive to point X and then do the mission.
Yeah.
So I didn't need the open worldness of it.
I would agree. Watch Dogs 1 was bereft of interesting in-between content. And that was my main problem with it. 2 had a lot better stuff in it. I think Ubisoft has gone on to make even better games in open worlds. I think the, like I've said multiple times, the latest Assassin's Creed is an incredible open world game because there is a lot of flesh between points of interest. So if you've got a mission to do, go from here there to do it. But there's a billion things that you could go do in the meantime that are between there and there. And I like that. I like it. And they're not just the same stuff over and over. There's a lot of diversity and, you know, interesting things to do. So hopefully they bring that to this. But what would really set this apart is this idea that you are not just a dude. You can jump between people. And from a narrative standpoint, that almost sounds like, well, how are you going to work that out? Like, how do you make a cohesive story about a bunch of strangers or about a bunch of faceless people in a crowd? But gameplay-wise, that sounds neat. Like, what if your fast travel in this game isn't pretending that your car got there real quick because you unlocked a tower or whatever? What if it's you jumped into a lady who's clear across town? And now you're the
lady.
I
imagine you're not hacking the person and occupying them in like a cyberpunk sense.
I assume not. I assume not. I don't know.
Just that you get to play different people.
I think the idea, if we are all correct in our assumptions, and we don't know near enough to say for certain, but the idea is you would jump between them because you're all in on it. In other words, they're all hackers. And so what you're doing is saying, well, off to you, Bill. You do the, you go, now it's your, you know, now you go. But instead of you just sending somebody off to do a thing, you're recruiting people that you'll get to play, that you actually get to play, and that in theory this is just an endless number of unique situations where you could jump around and do some really strategic stuff during missions and things like that. That's the thinking.
Hmm.
Does that grab you by the chode and yank or no?
I have to see more. No chode for me.
No chode. All right.
It's a weird analogy. No, I think in particular because this sounds like the kind of thing a AAA studio doesn't do very well,
mm-hmm.
which is like, let's forego all those that AAA narrative, get voice actors and do sweet cinematics and make a game that sounds more like a roguelike where I get to start as different NPCs and try to do things and probably die. If I log into Aisha Tyler, who's always in those games, I think.
I think it's Aisha, I think.
Yeah. Aisha Tyler. Yeah. Because I know she's in the first one. You could hack her phone.
Yeah.
But, you know, do I get to play her? Is it anybody? Or is it a team of NPCs? So, like, that's... To me, playing anyone sounds more interesting. I just don't believe that a AAA studio will do that. So we'll see.
Well, according to the listing that got then pulled as part of this leak... it says this. The main character in Watchdog Legion is an NPC that you select. Quote, the product description states, play as anyone. Every individual you meet in the open world has a full set of animations, voiceover, character traits, and visuals that are generated and guided by gameplay systems.
So can I play as Gary from Lantronic?
I mean, in a just world, yes.
Or like, is it like, hack into anyone, you know? It's like, really?
Yeah. I mean,
play
why,
as, who's the Peter Parker actor?
What's his name? Paul? No, Tom Hardy. Tom Selleck. Tom.
I don't even know.
Flim Flam. What's his name?
Well, I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
Can I play that guy?
Tom Holland. Jeez.
Tom Holland. So I'm like, Tom Holland, he must live in London, right? Is he an NPC I can play? I don't know. I'm just being a little smart ass about this, but I'm like, I don't know about this. It sounds weird.
It does sound weird, but aren't you glad they're doing something ambitious and new and not just relying on the same old formula? Because I don't know.
Yeah, so ambitious and new, but they did call their game Watch Dogs Legion, like, a few years after World of Warcraft had a super expansion called Legion. So it's already got points off in my mind for like, what's an original name for our hacker game? It can be anybody.
Yeah.
Let's call it Legion. What game has been called Legion recently?
But Legion has always meant that, though. When somebody says we are Legion, it means we are everywhere. We are all things. We are, you know, it's a popular hacker thing,
and
too.
Like, World of Warcraft can maybe get away with it because the Burning Legion has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like they're just using a buzzword. It's the name of a faction that also happens to be a pretty big buzzword for selling a movie or mm-hmm. a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah, Path of Exile's, like, the expansion they're just releasing in a few days is also called Legion. It has points off for that, too. You can't just be like, well, we give up. We don't have a name. Let's just call it Legion because there's a whole bunch of something X. But so I'm a little like...
But you got things like... There's other games like... here, I got a list of them.
Assassin's Creed Legion.
Games. Legion Gold or simply Legion, turn-based strategy game. Legions, Magic the Gathering, Legion, Mass Effect, Legion, central villain of the video game Shadow Man. Well, these don't count. World of Warcraft Legion, you mentioned. The Legion, a killer character in a horror video game, Dead by Daylight. Again, not in the title. It's a common word, man. There's comic books and TV and movies.
I know. It's just they can't sit there and go, like, let's call our Watch Dogs game Legion because it really makes sense in the Watch Dog universe. Well, like, someone in marketing is just like, it's somebody thinking, like, Legion's a good word. People think, you know, like, they didn't sit there and really think, like, what's going to be an original, impactful name? So it's already off to a bad start in my mind.
Well, who said the original We Are Legion? I'm going to find this.
That's like, isn't it I Am Legion? Or no, I Am Legend. That's different.
Oh, okay. There was a 2012 documentary film by that name called We Are Legion. It was the story of the Hacktivists, a 2012 documentary about the workings and beliefs of the self-described collective known as Anonymous. So very much Mr. Robotish, you know, that whole thing. Okay. We are everywhere. We are Legion. You'll never know who we are, but we're there. We're working. We're doing stuff behind the scenes. You'll never know it's us. Secret society kind of stuff. I think that's as old as time. But if you say We Are Legion Origin, that's probably a video game. We Are Legion Origin. Let's see. The original statement, We Are Legion. It's from the Bible. Oh, I didn't know that. In Mark 5:9 and Luke 8:30, a man possessed by an evil spirit comes to Jesus looking for help. When Jesus, the spirit replies. Oh, he asked him his name. This has a typo in it. The quote in the Bible is, "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." So that's where they're getting it. That's the idea. That's the source. It isn't, hey, Warcraft had green dudes from space in it. We should call. I don't think it's the etymology of the origin.
I'm not saying they outright ripped it off. I'm just saying I don't know. It's got points off. It's points off from both.
All right. Points off from
both.
But
that doesn't mean Rose by any other name can smell as sweet. So ultimately, if this game is awesome, it doesn't matter. It could be called Bunghole and it'd be a great game.
Yeah.
So that sort of doesn't matter. But just hearing it right now, I'm a little bit judgy on the fact that it's called Watch Dogs Legion.
Yeah.
So I just picture Illidan with the hacker phone and on the hood, just like running around like, I'm going to hack Brexit. Yeah.
Yeah. How about John? John has an idea in the chat. You know, he's not here, but he's kind of here.
Sure.
He says, Watch Dogs 3, the one in England, Govna. He thinks that should be the title.
No.
Oh, no? Okay. Points off John. Points
off. I just don't know about that name. I know it's a small thing. It is a small thing. I shouldn't make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah. It
sounds cool, though.
It gets away from numbers, too, right? Which, again, they seem to do with a lot of their titles. Assassin's Creed games stopped calling them numbered at 4, was it? Yeah, because after 4, which was Black Flag, They were then Unity, then they were Syndicate, then they were Origins, and now they are Odyssey. They've stopped doing numbers. I wonder if we'll start seeing that more often. Like Call of Duty, we'll talk about them a little bit later. We know what the next Call of Duty is, and it's called Modern Warfare, and that's it. No Call of Duty numbers, no Modern Warfare 3 or 4 or any of that. They're just going back to Captain Price and his big dumb mustache and going straight to the throat with Modern Warfare, and they don't care anymore. Do you think
the numbers make it feel like you should start from one.
Yeah.
At least that's how we think of it when it comes to movies and stuff. And I think they're releasing so many chapters of these video games, and they don't want people to not buy the game because they feel like, well, I can't get into it. This is Magic the Gathering 127. I have to start at expansion pack one if I'm going to catch up to 127. And just the games are not, you know, obviously that's dumb. So I think this makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
Now I can just play whatever. I can play Assassin's Creed Odyssey and not care about the other ones.
Yeah, that's true. You don't feel like you're like, I'm fourth or fifth and I've skipped.
I mean, can you imagine playing Mass Effect 3 as your first game?
Oh, my gosh. Like,
you should play Mass Effect from 1 because the trilogy is meant that way.
Yeah, although 2 is still the best thing ever and the other two
and
are.
Now you can have never played Andromeda, and if there's ever another installment, you're okay.
Did you ever have a sandwich where the meat in the middle was just so good? Like the best middle sandwich you've ever had, but the bread on the other on the top and the bottom were just kind of you know, not great in different ways. The one on top is just kind of old.
I think I know what you mean. Especially like a Montreal smoked meat sandwich. Yeah. Oftentimes the rye is like, it's okay.
Right.
It's how it's meant to be eaten. But you're like, I just really like this big fat, fatty smoked meat bit in the middle.
Right. That's what Mass Effect is for me. Because 2 is the meat. 1 is a start, and then them fixing a lot of things for 2. Not a bad game, but just a lot of problems that they got rid of and fixed. And then 3 is just a misstep. But 2 is this amazing piece of smoked Montreal meat.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Oh.
Except 1 tasted good at first because it's the only one we had, so.
That's true. I mean, actually, one went down in my opinion after I played 2, because one weekend.
Oh yeah, 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 for sure.
Yeah, but mechanically mostly. Story and stuff's fine. I didn't have a problem with any of that.
No, 2 played way better than the first one. That was the big complaint. The first one had such a great story and setting, and then it was like, oh, I got to do this combat stuff.
It was bad.
Okay.
And it was like BioWare wasn't sure if they should just lean into the action or try to make this like an old BioWare game. And it's like they couldn't decide, and therefore both options kind of sucked. And 2, they were like, yeah, it's an over-the-shoulder third-person shooter when there's fighting going. And yeah, you can pause it and do some strategy, but really, at the end of the day, just shoot the other guys. And that worked a lot better. Yeah. Anyway, that has nothing to do with this, except to say this.
And also don't make us drive around on a dusty planet surface.
No, that sucked. That was really bad. That was horrible. Although, I wish games set in space where there's a lot of narrative, I wish they would have more big space in it. Because really, at the end of the day, like 2 and 3, you didn't feel like you were in space. You felt like you were in a lobby where you would choose a planet, and then a little ship on the screen would fly there, and then you'd have a load screen, and then you'd land and do stuff. But you were never like, I never felt like I was in space.
Except when you die from being in space at the beginning of it.
Oh, right. Because that is.
But yeah, I know what you mean, though. Yeah. Because their replacement wasn't that great, where it's just you were in a menu and you found a picture of a JPEG of a planet, and then you had to scan the JPEG.
It's something I've noticed that Bo does this all the time, where at the end of the day, he reminds us that everything in video games is basically a JPEG and you got to go get it. You do that a lot.
Sometimes they're like, let's sell the fantasy of this thing. And you're like, it's pretty transparent. I'm just playing with JPEGs. I can do this in Photoshop, people.
Yeah, no, it's not untrue. But that first game with the crappy moon landing thing at least was an attempt to get you out of the ship and be in a place that was kind of cool.
There just wasn't anything interesting on those planets usually. The environments were actually pretty cool, I thought. But
yeah, just, and I feel
like the random planets, like not the mission planets, but the random planets you'd land on, they just had capsules that you'd find. It was, and you'd get like whatever currency. It was
And like, look, again, story throughout, awesome. Just mechanically, 2 is amazing. John's arguing in the chat that he thinks I'm saying this now because he's not here, so he can't reply. Whatever, man. You know that 2 is better than 3 and 1. He knows this. So, whatever. You can come back next week. We'll have a full rebuttal.
Yeah. But you know, I would say though, 3 was favorable, still pretty good. I still enjoyed my time in 3. I agree that 2 is definitely the best of the 3, but
yeah,
they brought it home. I mean, it was okay for me.
Were you Lady Shepherd or Man Shepherd?
I was Lady Shepherd.
Oh, I was Man Shepherd. I don't know why.
My Shepherd was a Renegade.
Did you turn her?
Oh, I bypassed an entire boss fight because I went so deep in Renegade while they were delivering their monologue. You know, bad guys are like, blah, blah, blah. I just shot them and killed them immediately. And then it got skipped them. There's no boss fight. It was done. I was like, Renegade is awesome.
That's why that game was great.
And by the way, in Mass Effect 2, there was no opportunity like that in Mass Effect
2. No, in 3, they kind of watered all that stuff down.
2 was wicked. It was just like, oh, this guy sounds so obnoxious. Then the Renegade shows up and I'm like, click.
BioWare peaked then, as far as I'm concerned. Nothing since then has lived up to that. Not even close. All right, so let me say this. I don't know how we got onto this, but I kind of want to finish my thought on Mass Effect.
Because of Watch Dogs and...
Well, yeah. But in the Mass Effect case, I actually had a point. What was it going to be? Oh, I made Man Shepherd, but here's what I did. It was kind of a mistake, but I played through anyway. You know how you can go in there and just choose the guy and he looks like Shepherd and you're Shepherd? You can go tweak him if you want. And man, can you tweak him. So my guy had like big dumb ears. His eyes were way close together. He had big flappy lips like a duck. He looked terrible. So anytime he's supposed to be taking anyone seriously or he's romancing some character.
He's like, I'm a paragon.
He's looking, hey, I'm Captain Shepherd. What's your problem, everybody? Like it was the worst. I treated him very poorly and I feel kind of bad about it.
I made a badass female Shepherd. FemShep is the way to go.
FemShep is pretty great.
Yeah.
Anyway, so look forward to your Legion there. The other thing that the Legion name affords them if they decide to do that is this game could live a little longer with like long tail game. Maybe Legion implies a lot more multiplayer interactivity, asynchronous play, possibly spying around in other people's games, you trying to figure out who's real and who isn't. Like there's some stuff.
It just depends like what the emergent gameplay is like because like it's basically Grand Theft Auto with hacking.
Yeah.
Because you can steal cars and, you know, take stuff and then do car things with the hacking. It was really unappealing. Like, if it's a little more nuts and bolts with, like, actually breaking into people's data and getting their data and doing, like, roguelike things with it, which are not either narrative fueling, then that concept's always been there. I've always had the concept of a roguelike game where you're a hacker and... your job is to just like hack procedurally generated things and upgrade the software, forms of attacks that you have, things like that. And just you could make a roguelike game from this whole hacking paradigm. And it's too detailed to get into on the show, but I've had this idea, and I'm sure others have too, that you could just do that. Yeah. So if that's what this is, and that's really exciting. I just don't know that Ubisoft's the company to make that kind of game. So.
Maybe not. They are the company that has a giant map and about 10 towers you got to get to and make sure you get your fast travel points and climb that ladder and do that thing. So you're not wrong to be concerned that it's that again, but I kind of hope they go in a different direction. And by the way, if you're looking for a good game that lets you hack a lot of stuff and it's procedurally generated and kind of roguelike in its nature, might I recommend Invisible Ink? My game of the year in 2015 when it came out.
You actually gifted that to me, and I still have it installed, but I haven't started it yet.
You should play that game because what you're asking for is kind of there, man. It's really good. You should play that. It was like a Christmas gift like 2 years ago.
I know. There's a lot of games I need to get to. It's so honestly, playing games is really irritating because every time you play one game, you think about what you're not playing.
Yeah.
I find all the time. I bought the expansion for Surviving Mars 2 weeks ago and just booted it up today an hour before the show and played like 20 minutes.
Oh, we'll get to that, I guess, because you've been playing it. We'll talk about it later in the show, but that's another game I want to get more into. So I actually have some questions for you, which we'll get to here in a second. But now this is kind of a big deal. It's not going to be to core gamers as much as it is the industry as a whole. It's going to have a big impact on Apple's plans for their Apple Arcade subscription. And that news is they got up on stage and announced that both the Xbox One controller, Xbox One S controller in particular, it's important to note that because the previous ones do not work, which is true kind of across the board for a lot of devices. Xbox One's weird with their controllers. But anyway, Xbox One S controller and PlayStation 4 controller will be fully supported for iPhone, Apple TV, iOS devices, anywhere smart TVs, wherever you get this subscription system, and therefore all gaming that may use a controller will now use those two controllers. Up till now, you couldn't do that. So it's kind of a big deal. I guess for the longest time, the rumors were Apple had their own controller in the works. They were going to bring this thing out, and iOS gamers are going to freak out because they're going to have their own controller. And then what you saw instead was like third-party people making these MiFi controllers, and those work pretty well, but everybody secretly just wished that the two best controllers on the market might get support. And hot damn, they now get support. So this will be as of the updates that are coming later in the summer, and will be a part of that rollout of Arcade, the Arcade subscription thing, which I'm actually very excited about. And I'm more excited now than I was before because these controllers are going to make that experience much, much better. But it is interesting. It's them saying, look, we know that the market is already saturated with consoles. We're not trying to compete as a console. We're trying to compete as a service. And why not just use those controllers? The other funny thing is that both Microsoft and Sony seem to be all on board on this and excited about it. They posted stuff on their Twitter pages and are just like, yeah, dude, check it out. Our controllers are going to work with this thing, which I think is a strange thing because this is going to effectively compete with some of their services, you know, PlayStation Plus, PlayStation Now, or is that their TV thing? Well, whatever. Same for Xbox with the Game Pass thing and their other stuff. So I'm very curious about this now, way more than I used to be. Up till now, I'm like, okay, that's cool. For the huge, humongous, out-of-control mobile market, which doesn't really match me or any of us on this show, now you have me interested because there are some cool games being made for that service exclusively, and controller support is part of that. That's kind of a big deal. So, worth mentioning.
Like Oceanhorn 2, Knights of the Lost Realm.
Yeah, have you played that? You played Oceanhorn 1?
No. Is it good?
It's very good.
It looks like a Zelda clone.
It is totally a Zelda clone, but a good one. So if you're looking
for... The one that piqued my interest, because I hadn't heard of... I didn't know this was a thing until you put it in the show notes today. I had no idea. They're making a sequel to Beneath a Steel Sky.
Yes, they are. Exclusive
that's
to this
kind of crazy
service as well.
That's an exclusive?
It is to this service, yes. Apple's getting a bunch of exclusives. I know how much you love those when a company swoops in and says, hey, we'll pay you a bunch of money just to have your thing here. You love that, don't you?
No, I do not, actually.
Oh, wait, which... you're the same guy that thinks the Epic Store sucks. That's right.
I don't think the store sucks. I don't need another store, first of all, and they haven't made a case for me to get their store by holding the availability of games hostage on a platform that is open.
Yeah.
Now, the Apple thing is not a platform that's open, so I can't go into this saying like, ooh, Apple, why are they suddenly trying to make things exclusive? Because that's like their whole sales pitch, right?
It's
like,
their everything. They want you in their ecosystem, 100%.
That's why it's so shocking that you can use an Xbox or PlayStation 4 controller. Like that's so un-Apple. Like, where's my Apple controller? What's going on?
It is, but that's them, I think, conceding a little bit of ground. That's them saying, it's kind of like what Microsoft's had to do over the last few years. They've had to basically go, all right, well, we got real stubborn about all our platforms. We wanted everybody to stay here. And instead they went everywhere else. Windows Phone was a huge failure. All these little ideas were flops. What are we doing? Satya Nadella comes in and goes, I know. Why don't we put our rad services and our cool things everywhere? And let's quit being so platform or being platform specific, and let's be agnostic about our platforms. And it turned the company around, both in public opinion and their fortunes. They're doing great.
It's because nobody likes exclusivity. It's just how tolerant your market is to it.
Right.
If you can get away with it, then that's... you could look great. Some people will even espouse that, you know, they like their Apple products and, you know, they like these walled gardens and controlled environments because it suits them. But really, you're having something taken away from you in an industry that was founded on, you know, like just it's computers. It's founded on like accessibility and openness and you know, we love open source programs. We love community driven things. These are like pillars of just being, forget even just PC versus console, because consoles are just computers. Like they're all computers at the end of the day.
Right.
But nobody is a fan of it.
Well,
like, nobody likes it.
Nobody, well, people,
it's just what you can get away with.
Some people do like curated experiences, and you could argue that Windows is a curated platform.
Yeah, but you could say to somebody, well, we'll give you a curated platform, but the stuff that's on the platform is also available in other places. And this, people go, okay, sounds cool.
Yeah.
Which is, and they're not going to be like, what? My platform exclusive is available on another platform? Ah! Like, nobody does that.
No.
That's, like, not a thing.
No,
like,
platform exclusive. It is a thing. I agree with you. Platform exclusivity is a, is, I don't have a problem with everybody wanting everyone to have a platform, but it's the services on top of the platform that it gets weird if you're trying to be exclusive about it. Like the multiple stores on PC. Like, you know, I don't know. I guess it's not really a closed platform because you can make iOS games anywhere else you want to, too. But they, the way that theirs is closed is this effort to do this arcade thing. And a lot of, some of those games aren't exclusive to the platform, but some of them are. And so they're basically pulling a Sony just in a services sense.
Like, I think there was a time when things like consoles made more sense to us, because I remember installing video games on my PC and having to figure out, oh, I have to install my sound card. What's the IRQ of this thing?
Ugh.
Remember having to set up all those things, like, huh? Like, there'd be just these arcane things in the install screen. It wouldn't work. Like, getting games to run was a tough proposition, let alone buying hardware that worked and maybe it was compatible with the games. Makes consoles very appealing that everything was like, buy the cartridge, plug the controller, and it works.
Yeah.
That's not like the, that's not the reality of PC now. Everything is very plug and play, and very, it's very console like anyways, in many regards. So it just seems to me there's less and less of a value proposition going one over the other. And so I do cringe a little bit that there's going to be an arcade for Apple. I don't like it. I like the iPhone product because I think the phone works really great, but I'm not interested in a gaming platform from them. So,
I mean, I'm going to try it. Whether I stick with it, I don't know. But
I mean, as a Windows user, will I be able to install Apple, or do I have to have
I mean, this stuff's not going to run on, it's specifically going to, their game platform will run on smart TVs that have the Apple platform on it. They will run on Apple TVs, the actual plug into your TV, Apple TVs, little black box.
Okay.
It will run on your iPad, it'll run on your iPhone, and it will run on, that's it. That's it. They're not even meant to, they're not even meant to run on your Mac or anything. They're just supposed to be.
Why would Xbox and PlayStation even give them their controllers then? Because that sounds like, if I'm a parent, I'm not super into video games, but we're like, let's get an Apple TV, like a box. I've bought those before. You get an Apple TV box. You can stream your Netflix and movies through it. Sure. Now I have a console on it, too.
Kind of.
I don't need to buy an Xbox for Junior. He can play Oceanhorn 2 on the Apple TV. And
You're right. And like, by the way, I don't want to give too much smack to it. I played Oceanhorn 1 very skeptically. It's a really good Zelda knockoff. Like, genuinely good game. So 2 looks really good, and it might be great. But that aside, you're right. It's weird. But it's not that weird. PCs have been able to take Xbox and PlayStation 4 controllers for a long time, and even though it's in Microsoft's best interest to have that be a growing concern for them, because hell, their operating system is running on the PC you're using. But in Sony's case, I mean, this isn't a thing you can lock out. It's freaking, for the most part, it's Bluetooth. So it's more about Apple saying, yeah, we'll just support, we'll go ahead and let those two signatures work with our Bluetooth setup.
Must mean there's stuff in the works for later on with all this cloud gaming coming down the line.
Yeah.
Stadia really is the game changer. All this stuff is moot and no one's going to care about it in 5 years if Stadia really does take off.
That's so. Tomorrow, right? Their big conference? I think it is.
Oh, is it? I didn't know.
Hold on, let me look. Stadia E3. Because E3 stuff starts this weekend and I think Thursday maybe even for them.
Oh, interesting. Hey, I heard something's going on while we're doing Core.
Oh, what's that?
One of, like, is it the Sony or Xbox or something?
Oh, is
like
there
that?
A Sony thing tonight?
Yeah. No, not tonight. Next week on Core.
Oh, next week on Core. Yeah, I heard that too. Sony's only doing a video event. They're not doing a stage event.
Okay.
And they hadn't said anything about when they were doing it. They must have just announced that. See, this is the coup about Nintendo doing Nintendo Direct, Sony now doing video Direct stuff instead of a planned stage thing. They can pipe in with their thing and try to screw up everybody else. Like, they're going to pipe in during somebody else's conference. And have Sony there, which is going to be very hard for streamers not to want to tune to see what they're doing. Hmm. Okay, let's see. Google reveals Stadia games price and launch details on June 6th, so that's tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
That's at 12 p.m. Eastern, so that's 10 a.m. here. I'll be doing TMS at the time. But that's when we find out. We'll get the whole unveil tomorrow. We'll get what games are coming. We'll get how much it's going to cost and when it's going to get released, or at least we think we're going to know all that. They say that their fidelity at launch will be 60 frames per second, HDR with 4K resolution, and that it will eventually expand to 8K resolution with frame rates of up to 120 frames per second. I will believe that when I can see it. My internet will not freaking do that, dude.
No of one. All the apps that I... Oh, wait, is that Stadia?
Yeah, Stadia.
Okay. All right. I was going to say, the arcade app... None of the arcade apps look like high-fidelity games that they're pushing.
Oh, that stuff, yeah. No, the Apple Arcade stuff is a little different because you're not streaming those games. You're downloading them like you would normally. Like, yeah, you're just getting
what
the game.
What kind of hardware is on a little Apple box, you know, or an Apple TV? Like, it's not the same as you'd find in a console.
No, but they're... I mean, phone CPUs are getting to the point where it's they're getting close. Like... Fidelity wise, you're not going to be, you know what I compare it more closely to would be the Switch. That's the kind of fidelity you're going to get out of your phones.
So you're not going to get a ray tracing Quake 2.
No.
On this, because there's no ray tracing.
Not yet.
So for your hardcore, you'll still want to go to PC gaming for the best in graphics.
Yeah.
But this will serve a lot of, you forget, but a lot of people are not that fussy.
Right. Most people aren't.
It looks good and it's fun. It's fine.
It's like this headset I got from Oculus, the Quest. It's my favorite VR experience I've ever had because it's portable. And powerful enough. Is it as powerful as desktop? No. But I'm disconnected from it and I can go anywhere. Like, those are the concessions people will make. They'll make in favor of that over too many cables, higher cost, pain in the butt to set up. Like, convenience beats that every time. It's like form over function. It's the same
idea. It's really, like, crazy. The gaming industry, the trends could go in so many ways. I mean, VR is just on the cusp. We've got people... All kinds of game stores coming out, all kinds of different console options. We got cloud gaming coming down the pipe. In 5 or 10 years, one of these has to be normalized or over top of the other in a big way. It's just, I can't tell.
It's a weird time. Kind of fun, but also a little freaky. Like, part of me as a gamer is like, guys, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing next? Tell me now so I know what to expect. Like, I don't want to change all my habits in a day, but then I realize, no, this stuff will happen over time. It's going to take a while. Even if Stadia takes off, that's not going to happen overnight. You know?
It just felt like, you know, when Virtual Boy, or is it Virtual Boy? I can't remember.
Virtual Boy, now, sure.
Yeah. You're like, is this going to be a thing? And you're like, oh, no, it's not a thing. It wasn't a success. Like, you got to look at some of the stuff and be like, no, this is not the direction we're going to end up ultimately taking, but everybody's pushing something really strange and new right now.
Yep. In a way, that's exciting. In other ways, it's a little, it takes you back because you realize we're on the cusp of maybe a shift, but that's okay.
I wonder what it's like to be a young person right now.
Oh, they're probably stoked, man. They're probably stoked. I mean, I would be. I know some that are. Like, you know what kids are into right now? I was talking to this 13-year-old the other day, and neighbor kid, and he is so into cassette tapes. That's all he wants.
That's pretty cool.
Cassette
tapes. I like cassette tapes.
So, like, also my nephew's really into them. And he's 12, I think. And last week we saw them, and Nick, was it you that gave him? What? It's a couple of your cassette tapes, I think, to Luke. Anyway, my nephew Luke. Oh, it was Carter. That's what it was. She has some cassettes because she's sort of into them, and so they're all fascinated with these like spinning wheels and tape and, you know, mechanicalness of the way music used to be consumed. So there's a lot of that weirdness going on. There's that funk. Go ahead.
Well, I think there's a kind of magic to some of these artifacts. Like, Nintendo and their cartridges were like holy relics.
Yeah, that's true.
Even now, they're still kind of like, I know you don't need a giant piece of plastic to keep your video game code on, but they look cool. Like, the old original Nintendo card and the Zelda ones were gold because what was on them was special.
And they were magic. But if you broke one open, you'd see there's like a single little memory card chip in there that was soldered to the side of the plastic, and that's all it was.
I never broke one open, actually.
I did by accident, and then I get to see, and it was kind of disappointing because you think the whole world's in there of computing, and it's not. It's like this little...
And I'm kind of glad I never got to open one when I was young because it just felt magic, and you blow on it to help make it run. You know, remember? Mm-hmm. When it wouldn't run, you blow on it. So I can see that about cassette tapes is basically what I'm saying. There's something magic about a cassette tape.
Yeah, that's true.
Even CDs don't have, I find. Even when CDs came out, I was like, CDs. Cassettes are...
Trust me, one day people think CDs are the greatest thing. It's just that, you know, like when I was a kid, my dad had this really ancient reel-to-reel tape recorder. and it was big. Like a big one you'd see in an FBI office in a 50s movie or something. And it's just going huge tape to the other side, and you got a giant microphone recording everything. Fascinated me. I wanted to play with that thing all day. Even though a part of me is like, dude, CDs are here. What are we doing? Why are you even messing with this? Well, there's something about that, right? Like this just old mechanical trinkety tinkety thing that you could just get in there and like poke at and make it work. And if it breaks, you just try it again. And you, if the tape breaks, you tape the tape together so it could still run and stuff like that.
I had a Betamax video camera that I got inherited. Nice. When Betamax was no longer a thing.
Nice.
One Betamax VCR and then the Betamax camera.
Nice. That should have been the standard. It just didn't get the public support that VHS got. It had longer recording. It had better quality. They were smaller. Like straight up, that was a better format. And VHS came around the corner and peed all over it. It was sad. Hey, speaking of magic, Magic the Gathering is coming. Not to your pocket from buying a pack at the store. Not in video game form like that game you were playing in Arena. Nope. It's a Netflix series. And it's being worked on by the Avengers Endgame directors, the Russo brothers.
That's the weirdest part about this.
It's so weird. Like
I wanted to extremely not dislike this, but just be like, pass.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, well, the Russos are doing it.
Yeah. Apparently they're huge fans of the card game, like have been playing it for the 25 years it's been a thing. They love it.
Definitely like the Russos geek cred, or like, you know, when they're working on something, not because it's a job, but because they like something, it's clear. Like they've directed a lot of the Community episodes. So like that pedigree alone, usually they're very much in touch with a lot of the stuff that they're directing. And right. I mean, they succeeded so well with the Avengers films and the Captain America films.
Now, are you okay with this being animated? Because that's the other thing we've learned, is it's animated.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know if anime is a buzzword or not. I don't know why it can't just be a cartoon, or if it's intentionally like, you know, is this Japanese style? Like anime is very specific, right? You can't go to like Germany and make anime. Right. It's from Japan. Right. Like, I don't know if that's racist or not, but like if there isn't a perverted uncle, then it's not anime.
Well, wait, do you, I kind of agree, but what do you make of things like Airbender and Korra and all that? Because it's obviously got anime anime inspiration to it, but it's made in Japan.
It depends. Like Transformers, the 1986 or 1984 Transformers movie was made by Japanese animation studios. It's anime, even though it's a U.S. property. And there are definitely animes of Transformers that were made in Japan for Japanese audiences, never really made it over here, and I would call it that. I just think it's very much rooted in
what if Airbender was animated in Korea? Does that change it? Is it now kaname, or like what do we call it?
I don't want to be a gatekeeper, so I don't know the exact definitions. I just know usually anime is like there's a cultural shock when watching it, because it's not like what I associate with American or, you know, European style cartoons and stuff.
Yeah,
stuff
it's like the way that. I feel about Japanese RPGs versus Western RPGs. There's certain level of quirk, right? Like a certain level of weird. Or
it will be an anime. I'm just saying, I'm just like, why an anime? recently, actually, Wizards did, they did some, what they usually, when they have these cards, they'll do alternate art of the cards.
Yeah.
And usually those are collector's items that are available. When you buy a whole box, you'll get an extra card and it'll be a different piece of art. Or if you attend a pre-release, it'll be the same card, but a different art. And it's a canon, not canon, but it's like tournament legal and everything like that. But it's just an alternate art. And they did do a run of 10 Planeswalkers in anime by anime artists. And they look weird.
I'll bet.
Okay. They don't, like, the art style does not jive with what Magic's known for, which is that European Gothic.
Right.
Kind of look in many cases. It's weird. And so when they say anime, I'm like, are you going to make it look like that? Or is it going to be, you know, the gothic medieval look that you're known for in animation for?
Well, according to these guys, this particular project is, they're not saying, they've said animated, and that's all we know. We don't know if that means.
I saw it. They said anime.
Did they? Where'd they say it?
Anime is like, oh, I am Chatra.
Oh,
and
I missed it.
You know what? Like, when you watch this the subtitled version and the voice is like,
wait, where did you see that though? I don't see it in the article. I must have missed it.
Yeah. No, I read anime on the tweet that came out.
Oh, maybe they did. I never saw that. But
yeah, okay. Even on the article here. Blah, 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 blah. This is about change with the news that Avengers Endgame director, the Russos, are adapting the fantasy card game into an anime series for Netflix.
They do say anime there. You're right. Okay.
So I'm like, all right. I don't need to see an anime version of Magic the Gathering. I'd prefer it in the original art style, which is very cool too.
But what if there is a dirty little old uncle? What if he's in there?
That's fine. I just mean like, I don't know that I want that.
Yeah,
my Magic the Gathering. Because Magic already has a general identity with its art, and it's European and Gothic. And yeah. I prefer that to, like I said, and like I don't want to see Kill the Kill version of all my anime characters or Magic the Gathering characters. But that being said, I don't know that I even want an anime of Magic the Gathering characters because.
Right. Yeah, but what's the alternative? Part of the reason, if we're all being honest, part of the reason anime works as a style for stuff that isn't even produced in Japan is because it's cost saving. There's less frames when they're doing dialogue stuff. It's a little cheaper on the edges, so their fight scenes can be a little more lush or whatever. Like, there's all these trade-offs being made, and it works really well. In fact, I think it's the greatest contribution to animation is that they figured out a way to make really compelling, big, loud things happen with less. You didn't have to go full Disney to get Ghost in the Shell. You could make Ghost in the Shell, make it super rad, and cut a few corners when it comes to just characters standing and talking or whatever. And whereas U.S. thinking with animation, everything's always moving and flowing, and you know, it's a huge cost saving. So maybe that's all they mean. Like, I saw the Castlevania thing on Netflix. It's probably something in that vein.
Yeah, see, you know? That's what I'm like. I watched the first two episodes. I didn't get into it. I stopped.
Oh, I really like that. I'm surprised you didn't get it all the way through it. I like that a lot.
A little too, I don't know, serious or just didn't grab me.
Mm. But that's what I'm imagining, because anything less than that. Well, the guy that's doing this has worked on. Where is he? Henry Gilroy. He's gonna be writing the show. The Russos are acting as producers. Gilroy worked on the animated Star Wars shows, The Clone Wars and Rebels. Those were 3D animated, so maybe this will be also. That's the other thing we haven't mentioned, is it could be 3D.
Yeah, Rebels, not a big fan of the art style.
Rebels, I came around on it. I was okay with it, but I know what you're saying. I'm not even sure I like Clone Wars style either that much.
I don't love Clone Wars, but I just, you know, there's good stuff in there that got me hooked and I got watching the whole way through and I rather enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think there was a combination of both in Clone Wars and Rebels. I don't think the story's very strong in Rebels. I just didn't. I watched it actually a few seasons, but I just at the end, I'm like, I don't really want to watch anymore. So I was like,
eh. Yeah. It's also co-written by Jose Molina. His credits include The Tick and Agent Carter. The Tick, the TV show, not the movie or the comic.
The big issue here for me, and I think they should still make this, but I sort of... this goes to the way that I enjoy certain properties, even like WoW, where it's like Blizzard products. Like, sometimes there's a such thing as just too much getting to know these things. Like, I know a lot of the characters in Magic the Gathering from the cards.
Yeah.
And their identity and behavior in them that I don't want to know more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get it. You're happy with where it leaves you. Sure.
Yeah, the less you endow something with meaning, the more you can kind of approach it. And I'm a little bit trepidatious about the story. I mean, that's why I don't read any of the World of Warcraft books or anything like that. I'd rather keep my experience in the experience that I want. So,
sure.
But there's an audience for the extra stuff, and it's not for me to say people shouldn't like it or they shouldn't make it. Just that I'm not.
Do you think the core story and characters that are already in Magic are, it's good enough as a start for an expansive story like a series, or is it all pretty?
There's a ton of lore there. Like I think I'm aware on some level that they talk about there being every expansion now has a story. Mm-hmm. You only see hints of it from the cards and the little text, but you'll never get the whole story. But apparently, even in this new expansion, War of the Spark, Nicol Bolas has tricked all the Planeswalkers to coming to Ravnica. Then he sealed the gates for them to travel from plane to plane, and he's going to kill them all.
Whoa.
And that's the story. He's going to kill all the Planeswalkers because Nicol Bolas is the oldest Planeswalker. He's a dragon. He's the smartest being in the universe. And the Planeswalkers are a thorn in his side, so he's going to kill them all. And Planeswalkers are literally the heroes that they're going to make the show with Jace Beryl in, Liliana, Chandra, like all those characters that you know from Magic the Gathering. Like there's a story there, but I'm like, unplugged, don't want to hear that. I just want to play the card game. It's very cool. The art's great. And if that lore informs the artists and the atmosphere, that's great too. But I just don't need to read the lore. Like I don't, it doesn't impact my enjoyment of the game on a conscious level. On a subconscious level, if they're using that to make the great stuff they're doing, I think that's great. I just personally, I don't need it to enjoy their product. But not everyone thinks like I do.
Do you ever read like Star Wars books or anything like that? Has that ever been a thing?
No, because I'm like, I'm the opposite. There's certain types of, I think, folk who like to know more about the worlds that they, the fantasy worlds that they're a part of, right? Like, you want to know more about this thing. But I'm more on the vein of like the end of Inception, where, you know how in the end of Inception, you know, the top keeps spinning and then it answers whether it stops or not. So you can't tell if you're in the dream or not. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of left to you to decide. I appreciate that more. So usually the less things are explained, the more I'm like, oh, that's good. I like this. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, I have the opposite impulse, if that makes sense.
No,
so.
I get it. I felt that way about lots of stuff. It feels, I don't know, not cheap, but it feels like if you're going to make a Halo book, you had to make a whole lot of stuff up about characters and stuff that are just kind of dumb in a video game. Like here I am shooting stuff and now suddenly there's a story. Like I never, that was usually my reason for avoiding that stuff. I've softened on that a bit over the years. I do read the World of Warcraft books or the Warcraft books. I think they're quite well done, but I'm never going to think of them in the same way that I do, you know, Joe Abercrombie books or even the Lord of the Rings books or that is say Song of Ice and Fire or any of that kind of like the big, you know, Sanderson novels and stuff. To me, those are, how do I put this? It's like a TV show. Oh, I know what it's like. Remember Battleship, the movie? It was based on the stupid board game. Right. I didn't either because even more of this reason, which is like, dude, it's a board game and there were no characters. There was anything. It was just your ships and you tried to kill each other and it was super random and lucky and blah, blah, blah. I guess it's fine as a game, but that's a terrible base for to then go make a thing. I got to go pay $14 to watch happen. Like it. That always just felt cheap and lame to me. So I'm a mix of both, I guess. Just depends on my mood.
It's weird because there are exceptions. Battlestar Galactica was a great show. I enjoyed watching. And the board game is even better. And I think the enjoyment of the game is definitely heightened by the fact that you watch the show. Or else the board game just kind of feels like whatever.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm a little... The fact that the Russos are in it are what's like, oh, okay. If they announced this without the Russos being in it, I'd be like, hard pass.
Yeah.
It's just, in Endgame, I'm about to spoil Endgame. So if you're going to, if you're sensitive to that or haven't watched it, please go away. At the end of Endgame, you know, there's a whole movie with Captain America doing his thing and going through time that they didn't even explain. Can you tell me about the woman? Nah, I don't think I will.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Like.
Everyone knows who she is because she's Agent Carter. That's how they know, because it's Agent Carter. They don't have to know.
Kevin Feige could get launched into space and never to return, and the whole Marvel property could just go into... You'll never get another Marvel movie again, and the way they didn't explain it.
Yeah.
It's going to have you thinking about it, which is what's great about it.
But don't you think they explained it a little bit? She wasn't just some random lady. It was Agent Carter from all those years
before.
Yeah, they
did. They showed it, but they didn't go into much detail. You know it was Peggy, but like, you know, it's good that they just the less details, the more you're able to put.
I agree. That's why I love Mad Max so much. Fury Road matters to me more, but not because.
Perfect example.
It just leaves so much stuff to your imagination and so much world building on the periphery and doesn't have to pound it into your head and give you narration and dialogue to prove it all. It just is there.
Why are they milking grown women for milk and why do they love milk so much? I don't know. We're not going to tell you because this movie. That's the biggest criticism of Fury Road, the most consistent one. It's just a car chase. And I'm like, yeah, because if there's no car chase, they'd have to explain everything. And who the hell wants that?
Nobody does.
It's like, it's a bunch of explaining. You see, in the post-apocalypse, we don't have cows. We have women. Right, that we're going to
get the nourishment. And they hoard them because they're the guys in charge and they have all the power. But also, this is all stuff I just put in my own head. I didn't need them to spell it out for me. And I love that. Like my favorite world building.
Why is a mechanic their expert at child rearing and giving birth and cutting umbilical cords?
Yeah.
We're not explaining that either.
Nope. But he's going to go ahead and tattoo your blood guy early, your blood bag man, who, again, they don't explain why that's a thing to do, is hang them on your car so you get a good blood source the whole time you're out there fighting people, but you still got deathly blood cancer the whole time. Like, there's so many things like that. Oh, it's so brilliant,
that's
dude.
That's what makes it good, because you imagine, like, that allows you as a viewer or a person experiencing the thing to bring your own ideas to it.
Yep.
It happened in D&D this weekend, Scott.
Yeah.
There's a murder mystery going on. Varel, having checked the foot tracks, there was 3 human foot tracks and 1 set of lizard folk foot tracks. And Kyle says, did Nash find some empathetic reason to free some imprisoned humans from Orp? And did he help them? He came up with that himself.
Yeah.
Like, usually it's my task to come up, and I'm like, man, that's a better storyline than I even thought of. Maybe I'll just steal it. And that's, you know what I mean? Like, people, we all have a desire to help whatever art we're witnessing by inputting our own ideas. So I just think the more you endow it, that's why this geek culture always, like, I cringe a little bit when it's like, I have to know everything and everything has to be explained and everything has to make sense. And I'm like, actually, the less it's explained, the more we enjoy this. There's a middle ground for this kind of stuff. So that's why I'm like, Magic the Gathering card game, I don't need to know. I know Jace Berylyn usually makes me draw cards or discard cards. He's a jerk. That's all I need. And he dresses in blue constantly. That I'm good.
Yeah, you know, I get it. So that's why they can never make if they ever tried to make a proper Dungeons & Dragons film, I would be ambivalent or worried, because how can you recreate that experience in a film? Like, you're never the best stuff happens in our heads. It happens in real time, like you said, with Varel and his idea, or with Bo and his wacky choices, or whatever your DM decides to do that day, and however your characters react. Like, that's the magic of those games. Literally magic. But Magic is similar to that. Magic is about these stunning paintings by a myriad of artists, and we're getting a phone call. Should I take this?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. I didn't expect a phone call, so we're going to take one. Hi, who's this? Hello?
Hello. I'm calling in for this weird talk show. Am I on?
You are. Who's this? What's your name?
Oh my God. My name is Scurvy Nuts Lamont. I'm in your channel right now, streaming live. I'm just wondering what the fuck is going on here. I'm looking at this guy's beard here that looks like a baby bird fucking nested in there a little bit.
All right, he's a troll, so he's out. Bye. Hey, if you want to call, 801-471-0462. We'd be happy to take your call. Just don't be an a-hole.
I didn't know there was a bird in here. Can you see it?
No, I don't see it. Is it just because you got such a furry face? Is that what you're saying?
Hmm.
Whatever, dude. Everybody Everyone in our chat room is turned on. What was I going to say? Oh, I don't know where I was. Oh, no. I just totally agree with you. I'm 100% with you on this. Let's see if this is the same person or not. Hi, you're on the air. Who's this? That's him again. Bye. All right. I'm not doing that. Sorry. No calls today. No calls. All right. You guys have abused the system. You don't get to call in anymore. All right. Let's talk about Call of Duty. Modern Warfare got announced. It's got crossplay across platforms. That's kind of a big deal. So Xbox people and PlayStation people, and I assume PC people maybe, will all be playing together. I don't know. That's always a loaded gun, but that happens with Fortnite and a million other things. So maybe they're over that now. I don't know. And it no longer has a season pass. It also looks super gritty and is a return to the Modern Warfare days of Modern Warfare Call of Duty 4, which had Captain Price and all that business in it. They say this is a hard reboot of that. So they are starting there again and pretty much starting over. And there's no zombies in this.
Not yet.
Well, it's almost... It used to be every other... And it was the Infinity War games that didn't, and then the other ones did. I forgot the name of the other company. Infinity Ward and whoever just did 4.
Treyarch.
Treyarch, thank you. Treyarch did the zombies, yeah.
Yeah.
And the zombies will not be included in this. They do say that there will be continuity and consistency across all of its modes, which means character progression will carry over between them. And guns will feel the same in multiplayer as in single player. Beyond that, the changes that are coming could be good news for fans who pick up the game when it releases October 25th, specifically those who don't want to pay for new maps, but do want to play with those on different platforms. So anyway, that's a thing. Crossplay will be available for PC, to PS4, to Xbox One. You can be anywhere, anytime on any of those platforms and play each other. The other bit of news that's interesting is, they talk about no season pass, which I already mentioned. and they will have free maps and events instead down the road that will be free to all players. It seems like they are making a shift to a more, I don't know, a friendlier approach to the post-game launch stuff. Anyway, I watched the trailer for this, and I think it looks pretty good. And I know we get a Call of Duty every year, and every year I get a little stoked, and then I kind of like a thing about it, and then I kind of forget about it. But this is definitely, like, harder and darker. The campaign is back, of course, which is why I play these games. I know a lot of people just play them to shoot each other, but no, that's not me. I like the stories. Have any interest in this? You want to fight some terrorists? So, what do you want to do?
So is this this is not a numbered release? Is it, are they doing a new model with this, which is just like an online game that sees constant updates, or is it still an installment game?
I mean, something to that effect. It's basically, you know, I don't know that it'll be in, I don't think it's going to be like Destiny. Well, I guess it could be, now that you say that, where it lasts for a long time.
I mean, it
just
seems overdue. Like, it seemed Call of Duty in my mind was the only game getting away with having a new version every year, and, you know, also nurturing esports in that way, right? Like,
right.
No other esports game. It's kind of, they're all free to play, they're all always online. If they're not free to play, they're like Overwatch, you buy it once and you got it forever kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one they literally are calling a reboot of Modern Warfare, so I would assume that that's a focus on story and character first, and then go deeper after that into what modes are there, what multiplayer is available, that sort of thing. I think it looks really nice. The engine's been hugely overhauled. That's probably good because the game was starting to look a little long in the tooth in terms of, you know, the visuals of Call of Duty haven't changed much in the last 5 years. And yeah, I don't know why, but it interests me for the first time in a while.
They get to bring that awesome character back with the beard that they're showing here. I forget his name.
Captain Price. He's amazing. Price is incredible. Yeah. No, he was great. And he had that dumb mustache, huge beard, just a total badass. They hint that others may be coming, so maybe we'll get Soap. I remember him. I remember Ghost. You remember Ghost? He was a guy.
No, I don't remember
Ghost. He wore a mask with like a skeleton paint on it.
I think I played Modern Warfare 1.
Yeah. That's about it. Those guys were in that. And then they were in two. Some of them died, though. So, yeah. I'm into it. Bring it on, guys. Let's see
if
how you do.
If it's free to play, I'll definitely give it a shot.
Now, let's talk about the elephant in the room, literally. A giant guy in a coat and a hat named Mr. X.
Did you play any more of Resident Evil 2? The last I saw were you getting chased around a desk.
The answer...
By the way, getting chased around a desk is like something, you know, when you're in a fight with your spouse that happens. They're like, you did what? They're trying to nail you with something, which is what's happening.
I mean, he scares the crap out of me. Like, literally, I've been scared by games before, including my playthrough of RE7, the Outlast 2 playthrough I did, all that. Scared the crap out of me, no doubt. But nothing has scared me like Mr. X scares me. And it's happening in an old game that's just had a graphical update so that you're more immersed in it. And most of the game so far hasn't really freaked me out. It's been fine until Mr. X came along. And now I can barely pick it up. Like, I'm supposed to play tomorrow. I plan on it. But if I come up with a great excuse, I may not. I don't know. Because it scares the shit out of me. He's so freaking scary. And to know that he's anywhere, anytime, he could be in any room and I'm walking down the hall and all of a sudden I hear thump, thump, thump and I got to run. F that, dude. Oh, it really.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if this is the kind of thing that you want to do. Like, I realize it makes for great like audio clips and people love it, but I genuinely feel it's harmful to you. Like, I watch those videos and I'm like, oh my God, why do people ask? Like, I see you scream that way and I'm like, I'll never ask him to play a horror game. Like, look at that. It doesn't look like you're having fun, I guess.
John loves this. He thinks it's hilarious.
I mean, everyone loves everyone because it, you know, it's an extreme reaction and it's endearing. You know, and you can be thankful that, you know, you're not your best self when you're in that scared mode, and so it's good to know. It's reassuring to know that nothing horrible comes out as a result, right?
Yeah. I mean, but see this guy with his giant leather coat on and his dumb hat coming out of a dark, horrible corner with modern shadow casting graphics.
Like, I mean, I played the original Resident Evil 2 on, you know, both. I've got the full experience, so I know what Mr. X is all about. Yeah. And, like, I'll even say, personally, I'm like, yeah, I don't need to play this game again. I played it plenty when it was pixelated, so I don't know.
I my promise was to play it because somebody donated it, and so I'm committed to doing it. I will finish this game, but I didn't expect him to be such a freak. I'm this close to just installing the Thomas the Tank Engine mod or something.
I think that'll make it worse, though.
Oh, shit.
Because then every time Thomas comes on, you'll be like, no, no, he's going to get me. Like, it's just on the TV. Why are you freaking out, Scott?
Here's the clip. Let's see if there's audio from me running around the desk from Mr. X. They have it saved in the chat. Let's see here.
Brace your ears, listeners.
Oh, he can come in here. Shit. Ow! He starts walking around the desk. Oh, my gosh. I try to shoot him.
No.
I realize it does nothing.
No. No. I can't do him, guys. I can't do him. You're coming too fast.
So,
you sound like Goofy sometimes when you do that.
I don't mean to.
You channel your Goofy there.
I don't mean to, but it's just this thing that is so terrifying to me. And it's not supposed to be. He's supposed to just be an inconvenience. He's supposed to be just a pain. But he's not. He's just a big, unstoppable dude. Oh, I don't like it. And he does nothing but just body slam you. Like, if I do... Okay, so there's a sexy Mr. X mod. There's also a Dr. Manhattan mod where he's just all blue. Maybe I'll do that. I don't know, dude. I don't know what to do.
I just still think he'd be scary no matter what you put him as, because it's this thing that's going to come at you and kill you.
Yeah. No, he's awful.
And like, then you can't interact with it in any way, right? Like,
no.
There's nothing that's going to get him.
No. I mean, I can go hide. Somebody did tell me, I heard during the week, that if I shoot him a bunch of times, I can bring him to his knees, which effectively stuns him. So I can create a stun, but it's only temporary.
You waste and you still have to run. So much of your resources.
Yeah.
Doing.
So John says, we'll just keep running to the safe rooms, and the safe rooms being rooms with typewriters in them. The problem is that's horseshit, because that room I'm running around the table in has a typewriter sitting on the table. And that's a safe spot. You're supposed to be safe there. Oh, I hate him. Just looking at this video.
I think it's
going to
be a closed room, not an open area.
Yeah. And you got to understand, I only play scary games because you guys ask me to.
And if I'm being honest, it's like, I hear how you're playing the game.
Yeah.
You're a very thoughtful, rational human being as you progress through the game, planning, strategizing. And then when Mr. X comes, not so rational.
No.
So then I'm like... This is definitely, like, identifying whether something's a save room or not is kind of not something you can do in that moment.
Yeah, no, he is just a nightmare. And I didn't expect him to be quite as, I knew he was coming, and everyone kept saying, oh, you're really close to getting Mr. X. I'm like, oh, no, I haven't seen him yet. And time would pass. I'm like, okay, cool. I've dealt with those ceiling walker guys. They piss me off, but they don't scare me. This fills me with like adrenaline dread. And it makes me feel like I just need to get up from this chair and run. Like right now, this is the truth. I'm just looking at a clip of me screaming, of him chasing me around the desk. I am now acutely aware of just how dark my studio is, except for the lights that are on facing right at me, how dark it is over there, how that door right there is open, and that it's pitch black in that room. Like these are
imagine a man walk through it, making eye contact with you, never breaking eye contact, and just walking towards
you
slowly.
Like this, it's prime Mr. X.
If that
territory.
Happens to you on the road when you're like in the urban areas downtown, someone makes eye contact with you and just starts walking, you're freaking out.
I got hair on the back of my neck right now. My hair is going like going up. Isn't that bad?
I don't think you guys should encourage him to play more scary games.
I was worried about my heart health, probably.
There's so many games in the world. Yeah, well, I worry about you, you know? And I just, it doesn't sound like you're having a good time.
I mean, you know? I was until he showed up. Like, straight up, I was having a fine time. But then he showed up.
The less you're having of a good time, the more everyone else is having of a good time.
Yeah, this is all true. All right, well, let's talk about what we've been playing. Oh, there's video of John being scared? Let's hear that real quick. Okay, so here's John being scared by Mr. X, I guess.
I hear stomping. He already got here. No, he didn't.
See?
Did not.
Even John knows. Where is he? Where is he? Oh, this scares me just watching him.
Oh, that's not the way out.
Right there.
Shit. No. You're awful.
Okay, but that's nothing, John. You're just like, look at the guy. He's a funny
my
guy.
Heart, it's fluttering.
Because John's not a chicken shit like I am. All right. That doesn't matter. Let's talk about what we're playing. I've been playing more. I played that, but that hasn't. I haven't touched that since last week. So I'll probably play it tomorrow. Elder Scrolls Online and the Elsewhere expansion. I've been playing that. I've been making progress with my Necromancer. He's rad. And I like him a lot. I like his abilities. His kit's really fun. Progression of that game's fun. I like ESO quite a bit. It's my favorite second MMO. If I'm not playing WoW, I'm playing that. And I really like it. I think it's good. More to see there. But it's also kind of the perfect zone for me, this whole expansion space, because not only are there dragons to kill and cool stuff, but it's also very deserty and very much my vibe. And necromancers are always my favorite thing to do, no matter what game lets me be them. So... I'm sort of into it. And then I've been still playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I've been streaming that. And we'll do more of that. In fact, last week, instead of playing RE2, I played Assassin's Creed because nothing's scary in that game. And then Steam World Quest, more of that. The Hand of Gilgamesh, or Gilgamesh is the full name of that game. It's great. It's awesome. I can't say enough
How
about
evolving
it.
Is the card mechanics in that game? Because I did wishlist it and I did look at it. Yeah. I don't think I picked it up yet because I wasn't.
I think the
I
card
wasn't
100% mechanics...
sure how, like, you know how combo-y, like, and down to brass tacks it is in Slay the Spire when it comes to building your deck. I wasn't. It didn't really communicate that effectively if cards were just spells. Or if there were some deep, like, interactive mechanics that made deck building compelling.
Well, there are definitely interactive mechanics. There's all sorts of stuff like, I forget the name of the card, but your main knight guy can cast this thing on himself that gives him, you know, +2 to damage for the next 3 turns or whatever. And then he can do a shout that will knock, will intimidate the whoever you're fighting, and they'll lose 2 ticks of power for the next however many rounds. So you can really maximize your damage during those fights. And then at the same time, if you use one of his third ability of just the knight's abilities, you get a bonus 4th that's kind of random, but you get rewarded for chaining together character abilities. You can't always do that because there's not enough of them in your deck. It's all very random in that way. But if you have 3 abilities from any of the 3 characters that you're rolling with, you can... get huge bonuses out of that. But also there's value in combining their abilities. So he does the shout, the mage lady does the hit, the healer guy heals one of your own, and boom, you're done with your turn, and you wait for the other guy to do your thing. Like, there's a lot of interesting mechanics there that are even more than Slay the Spire, more deep and strategic, because you're dealing with 3 characters with 3 very different ability sets, whereas Slay the Spire is just you, some trinkets, and a deck. It's good, but it's, you know, I would say that this is very similar to that, but then you add 2 more characters and it really beefs things up. I think it's really cool, but I don't think, as I say this to you, I don't think I'm the expert, because I think I prefer my card games. I'm going to sneeze. If only I had a button for that.
Gesundheit.
I'm not like a pro at these kinds of games, but I know I'm having a lot more fun here than I am, say, with that Hearthstone expansion or... just competitive CCGs, like that kind of stuff is not interesting to me. And this at least has this cool story. It's got some really interesting mechanics. I think the card stuff's really smart. How you build up power to use special cards is really fun. Every fight feels fun and engaging. It's just a neat little game. Those guys haven't made a bad game yet, and this feels like another game that's not bad.
It definitely looks compelling. I think I might pick it up at some point. Yeah. I've did pick up Thronebreaker, so I guess that was where I ended up spending my money on.
So have you already played, have you tried it yet?
No.
Okay, so this is that Witcher Thronebreaker thing where you play the combat.
I remember I was looking at this and I was looking at I keep wanting to say Thornbreaker, but it's Thronebreaker.
Thronebreaker, yep.
Good Old Games was having a big sale and I decided to pick it up on Good Old Games.
Oh, GOG.com, eh? Steam. Yeah. Well, they own the IP, so why not get it from them, I guess.
But it was between this and that one that I was picking between the two. And it just kind of won out because I was just more curious about Thronebreaker than Steamworld for now. But I did wishlist Steamworld, so
Nice.
I am curious. Like, your recommendation means a lot in this regard, and so I was just curious about how the cards, how integral they really were to the game, because, you know, some games they have cards, but it's just they don't do much with it. So I was just curious.
They definitely do with this. Like, it's your main mechanic is the cards. So they've done a lot with it. And I played it both ways, with a controller and with a keyboard and mouse. And I think I'm pretty even on what I prefer. I think they're both great input methods. Surprisingly, the controller works better than you thought. But if you're like a keyboard and mouse man, piece of cake, no problem. Tell me about, I played Thronebreaker, but you haven't yet. When you do, you got to tell us what you think, because that thing's cool.
I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Witcher 3 is still a game that I have like to get back to, which that might happen before I get to Thronebreaker. I really just bought it because it was on sale.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted a reason to buy some of good old games. I actually really like good old games, but I don't find them often. It's really my number one destination for abandonware, right? Whenever I want to spend a couple bucks.
Yeah.
On something old, I'll go there and just buy it. I did buy Diablo 1, and I did log into it for a brief second, and I went, whoa.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And I was like, I need another day. I logged out of it. I didn't really play it. I picked the wizard, and I got into town, and I went, whoa. A little worse than I remembered.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can play this right now. But I found out today that the expansion pack is being released for free if you bought it. So I don't know what the point of that was, just that I got back into good old games and was checking out the library and stuff like that. And Thronebreaker was on sale, and it was just already cheaper than on Steam. I think it was on sale on Steam too, but it was like $20 more on Steam. I was like, oh, I don't want to give my money to Valve.
Let's get old games,
right? Yeah. Direct to the company.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get spoiled on stuff because I still haven't finished Witcher 3. I have no idea how far I am into it, other than I haven't done any Blood and Wine or the other expansion. I'm just in Skellige, so...
Oh my gosh, you're about where I am.
I basically kind of hit it and quit it. I banged Yennefer and stopped playing. That's what... I was like, sweet, I won the game. Anyways, let's move on.
You've got your, you had a goal. You reached the goal.
It wasn't my goal, but I was like, okay, cool. I stopped playing.
That's awesome.
I hit it and quit it, but I got to get back to it.
So. Yeah. Well, Thronebreaker, what impressed me with it was the story and the VO in that is like maybe the best I've ever heard in a video game. It's really impressive.
If Witcher 3 is anything to judge by, that game definitely left an impression on me. I should be playing it. I'm stupid for not playing it, honestly.
If anything, this story and characterization comes off better in Thronebreaker, because in a fully 3D game like The Witcher 3, you get a lot of weird faces and robot-y looking moves, and you're like, whoa, that was uncanny. It's good enough for the most part, but once in a while a character will be just like trying to make an expression and it comes off stupid. Thronebreaker doesn't have any of that, because it's mostly avatars speaking. It's not really you're not walking around in a 3D space unless you're on the game world. And for some reason, that just really lets you focus on the VO work. It's incredible. The acting in that is crazy good. So you have to let me know.
Yeah, I'm excited to start playing it. So the only problem is in good old games, so I might forget I own it, because I don't turn on good old games that often.
Well, it's back to your point about what store is this game in? Where did I buy this? I would rather have it all in one place. Yeah, I totally get that. Yeah. Surviving Mars, you cracked that open again. They had an expansion.
So I bought the expansion a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
When it first launched, I insta-bought it. Because Surviving Mars is probably... I mean, I don't get through a lot of games in a year, so it's hard to say game of the year for 2018. But, like, probably the best release I played in 2018. Mm. Like, my favorite. Because it's SimCity, kind of. But it's on Mars. And so it's well executed, well done. It doesn't feel like a AAA title, if that makes any sense. Like sometimes it feels a little, that middle ground between indie and AAA.
I mean, what is that? Lack of polish when you say jank?
It's not even hard to say. Just, I guess so, lack of polish. Mm. Like just the you know, when the menu screen looks a little simple, like the little touches are not there. Like there's a simplicity. And it's not a bad thing. Yeah. It's just, you know, you're like, well, this isn't a AAA game, but it's definitely not made by, you know, two people in a basement.
Right.
But overall, it's really good. And I've started to crack into it. Like, I started it today, actually. and I haven't even done any of the expansion stuff yet, but there's a lot of new stuff. There's competing colonies that you can trade with or steal tech from on Mars. Just tons of new mechanics in the game, and I can already feel the addictiveness encroaching. I'm building power lines, sending my drones out. You can flatten. You can actually, so if Mars is, has an uneven terrain, there are mountains, there are raised surfaces. You can now deploy your drones to flatten out surfaces, which is great because sometimes your domes just don't fit like in the spaces where the crappy landscape of Mars won't let you fit things in. So you can now mold the landscape with your drones, which is already really cool. I recommend it if you want a good city builder that's like very, it's not tense, you know, like there's no, it's the opposite of Resident Evil 2.
Yeah.
Like zero, you'll have zero screaming.
There's no Mr. X on Mars. Not yet, no. Anyway.
And there are events, but you can turn disasters off if you really don't want to do it.
Sweet.
But also there are gameplay mechanics that let you get around it. Like, so meteor strikes are a thing.
Yeah.
But if you get meteor lasers that, you know, you can protect your buildings with the lasers and they shoot the meteors at the sky. So like everything that's a natural disaster eventually has a way for you to overcome it, because the whole idea is overcoming the harshness of Mars. So I leave them in and just deal with it. It's pretty fun.
Is it bad that I turn those off every game? Like all of those games immediately my
no,
first
because
thing.
In like games like SimCity, like it's like a SimCity nowadays. We don't have a solution for tornadoes. So tornadoes just mess you up. But in a science fiction game, they can, you know, you can invent solutions for the disasters. So I'm telling you, in surviving Mars, anything that's a disaster is overcomable. Mm. So I keep them on because it's part of the challenge of the game. And if stuff gets wrecked, your drones will rebuild it. That's no big deal. Mm. So it's not that punishing.
It's not so devastating you lose half your map and like, what did I even do this for? My old
save. I haven't found any situations where it's even actually been that punishing, to be honest with you. Because as long as you have the materials, which you should, it'll be rebuilt by your drones. Like, this is science fiction. The drones are pretty, like, as soon as something's broke, the ghost of it's there, so the drones know to just go and fix it. You don't have to, like, when stuff breaks in SimCity, you've got to manually salvage it, mm-hmm. and then rebuild it and, you know, rejigger it. In this one, your drones, I think you still have to salvage the broken stuff, but your drones will fix everything up for you, so it's a lot better.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. Eat a lot of potatoes, says Revendon, I guess.
And a lot of the natural disasters are not, a lot of things that go wrong on Mars are not like the natural disasters, but like dust.
Yeah.
So if you two buildings are too close together, it'll create a lot of dust, and dust will get on your equipment, and it costs maintenance to clean the dust. This sounds like the most boring thing, but it's the awesomest part. Your stuff will get all this dust. You're like, why is there so much dust? I'm like, oh, I've got a cement extractor next to my solar panels, and it's getting them super dirty. I better move my solar panels because it's expensive to clean. And I just love the idea that I have to worry about making sure to keep Mars dust off my stuff. It's great.
Well, I don't know if you knew this, but when I was working as a porn actor in the 90s, my name was Sandy Equipment. And it was a good time for a while. While it lasted, you know, I aged out of it.
Sandy Equipment could be a guy or a girl's name.
Oh, totally.
Girl porn star or guy porn star.
Yeah, it didn't matter. I could have gone either way.
Okay. You're both.
If you're both. Yes, exactly. All right, well, that all sounds good. And yeah, I guess you're still poking your head in Path of Exile, still got your claws.
Yeah, up to level 70 now, and the last act, things are getting hard. Yeah. Not much to say. Everyone knows the Diablo loop. I've talked lots about it. I think I might quit the game because it's eating up too much of my time. It's pretty, you know.
Yeah. You can wait for that next giant Diablo 4 killing expansion.
That's not till 2020, so now would be a good time to quit and come back for the big expansion.
I wonder, I mean, at this stage, let's say Diablo 4 does get announced at BlizzCon this year or sometime down in the fall, it'd be interesting if these guys just beat them to market. Like, how do you even know what you're fighting against until you know what Diablo 4 even is?
I think even if they announce it, the Diablo game is probably a ways out, unless they do the new Blizzard thing of, like, announcing it and launching it quickly, like they do with some of their other properties these days.
Yeah.
I have to imagine it'll be a ways out before that thing sees release for new Diablo. So I'm pretty sure we get this Path of Exile mega expansion before Diablo 4.
Yeah, I agree 100%. All right, let's move on to calls. I don't have any calls today, but I do have this email from Tight.
Enough of calls.
His name is Tight Scrote Walker.
Tight Scrote.
Yeah, Tight Scrote Walker. Mr. Tight Scrote Walker, actually. His subject is, maybe we're getting trolled, but he says, the future of MOBAs is his subject. And he says, hey, gang, huge fan of your podcast. I started listening when I was into HOTS back in October during a break from League of Legends. As you guys were once a HOTS podcast that ventured into all things gaming, and I love that. My question is about the future of MOBAs in general. Where do you see this genre in 5 to 10 years? Why are only a couple of big players in the field? So do you think more will pop up? Or the main three will continue to reign supreme. Will MOBAs fizzle out and die? Thanks, yours truly, Tight Scrote Walker. That's a...
What's a tight scrote?
I don't know. I don't want to know. And why would you walk on it is the other thing. But outside of your name, I don't know, actually. This is a really great question because I think we've definitely maybe peaked with the MOBAs. Like, we're not in a growth spurt.
The best thing I read about it was something Ghostcrawler, Greg Ghostcrawler Street, the guy who's on a yacht.
Yeah.
He has an AMA, and he answered on one of his Tumblr AMA answery things, whatever that thing is. He expounded on this. I don't even know if it's a theory, but that MOBAs are our current generation's doorway to RTS. And the fact is that, you know, RTS like StarCraft, there's not a lot of games out there like that because it's a very niche market. It demands a lot of game knowledge, a lot of ability that the average person can't fully take advantage of, even though they might enjoy playing it a little bit. It's not very accessible to the wider player base. And the fact that MOBAs were created in an RTS game as a mod and eventually became its own genre basically is just an evolution of the RTS genre that is more accessible to everyone, because all you have to do is manage your own unit. And that the idea behind the map strategy involves other players. But mechanically speaking, it's a lot easier for anyone to wrap their head around controlling one unit with a limited set of abilities on their buttons.
Mm-hmm.
So that right there makes me think, well, we're always going to have RTS as a genre.
Yeah.
So I think MOBAs are going to be around for a long time, because I think that genie can't be put back into the bottle. Right. We're not going to, if all the MOBAs disappear, everyone's just gonna be like, well, let's just make old RTSs again. I think there's something to the top down playing field that is just universally great for viewership.
Yeah.
But
do you think it's always these three MOBAs, these two or three MOBAs?
Sure. I mean, so how many people tried to dethrone World of Warcraft? It's still around with numbers that would make any company envious.
Yeah, the same thing happened with MOBAs. Like, there was that DC MOBA. There was that other Lord of the Rings MOBA that was supposed to be all that and a bag of chips, and that went poopy. Like, Smite, you could argue, thought they were going to maybe do something different. And they're still around, but there was all these attempts, and I don't see those attempts anymore. Like, that's all slowed down, just like those World of Warcraft attempts kind of slowed down.
It's hard to peel away to something that's become the name in a particular genre. You have World of Warcraft for MMOs. I'm pretty sure they're still beating everyone out there, even though, I guess, they don't publish those numbers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
League of Legends, still probably beating everyone out there right now. Dota 2 is hanging in strong as well. In my mind, they're lesser of the two. I've played Dota 2. I think it's junky, but wow, it's popular, and if you like it, that's great. Hardcore. I just mean, I think the game client itself is I just didn't like it, but again, biased because I played League before I played that one,
right,
and
right.
I played Heroes, which is runs way better than Dota 2.
Mm-hmm.
In the other big genre, Battle Royale, we've seen that exact thing happen. Fortnite comes along, and to its credit, gets lucky, does everything right, capitalizes it, and is staying the course, eating Apex's lunch right now. Apex was like, even we were like, wow, finally a real game that isn't Fortnite that seems cool, and right now is having its lunch eaten by Fortnite. And so Fortnite's going to be the incumbent here too. So I think MOBAs are going to be a genre, I guess, that people are going to want to play.
Whether or not there's room for somebody new is the open question, though. Like, if there's ever room for someone new, I don't know. It doesn't feel like it.
I mean, it's hard to know when does World of Warcraft finally lose its luster for too many people and finally sinks below. Does it ever do that? Do Is it to the point where all the players who are in it just get old and die, and it doesn't have new blood anymore?
I mean, they're not even to the point where the other major competing MMOs that are successful by various metrics, like ESO, Final Fantasy XIV.
I mean, they look way better than World of Warcraft.
Of course they do. In a lot of ways, their systems are more well thought. Like, they've gone further in a lot of ways. It's not that. It's just that I think combined, they all don't have the same numbers WoW has, even in its old ass state.
No.
So yeah, like, that tail is long, but at some point it's not eternity. There's no way that thing lasts forever.
I mean, that's where I'm always thinking. I'm like, what's next for Blizzard after World of Warcraft? They can't just be like, that's the game we have. Like, there's going to be a World of Warcraft 2 at some point.
Yeah.
I just don't know when that makes sense for them. But, like I said, is when the population of the average median or mean of players' age, they finally die and it depopulates through death. And, you know, they have to make a new one to entice new audiences.
Yeah.
Or they're just inspired. Like, a lot of games, too, are you just driven to make it? Like, it could be that at Blizzard, no one wants to make another MMO. Mm-hmm. Like, just collectively. It's just no one has that passion or drive to do it anymore. But anyways, they're the incumbent, and there's still a desire for that game genre. People who are playing this game are still alive.
Yeah. Also, there are another tier of MOBAs that do great on mobile that we don't ever talk about because they're kind of numerous. But there's even an Avengers based MOBA coming out for mobile that will probably succeed wildly. There's a couple of Chinese based MOBAs that are hugely popular. One of them is owned. I've talked about it on the show before, and I forgot the name of it. Whatever it is, but it's owned by Tencent / Riot. So it's basically League Mobile, and that's a whole nother tier. So there's maybe room there for more to happen in different ways and stuff. But I think if you're just talking like competitive PC MOBAs, it's probably going to be League, Dota, and to some weird extent Heroes. And they just sort of chill there. They're the ones that stay.
We've seen a lot of people come and try and innovate on the formula and fail.
Yeah.
Like, not fail, just not reach the heights that, you know, League and Dota have. So they're the evergreen, they're the darlings. Whether you like their mechanics or not, that's what they have, a large population sustaining them, supporting them, and wanting them to be a thing. So they'll be around for a long time. People, again, the sports analogy works. People just don't get into basketball and stop playing it. If you really love basketball, you kind of end up liking basketball for all your life, and or being a tennis player, even if you just get out and play once every 2 weeks. I see there's tennis courts near my place. There are people there every afternoon playing tennis. Tennis doesn't fall out of fashion. I think we have a branch of gaming where the games just don't fall out of fashion.
Yeah.
And they're genre defining. So I think you're fine playing a MOBA. I personally think that top down view, as in for esports viewing, whether it's StarCraft or either of these MOBAs, makes it very watchable and very enticing, where I have a hard time watching competitive Overwatch. It's just I thought maybe they'd do that with Overwatch, and they didn't.
Yeah, there's a little bit of it, but it's not enough. I agree. It's too crazy.
I think FPS gaming needs to build into it a way to be able to watch it top down that isn't like wibbly wobbly. It's already hard for less. Some people complain even that League and MOBAs have too much lights and stuff going on for you to be able to see, even mm-hmm. though it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So FPS is way worse on that front. Oh, yeah. And so we need a way to make these things viewable for esports. And Overwatch didn't end up doing it.
I think that's why I like Rocket League esports so much. I love watching that. It's my favorite esport to watch when it's on. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because it's cars and this ball. And there's two goals. And you get it in or you don't. And then the other team gets the ball, and the cameras can be right behind the guy who has the ball, and switch very easily to the guy who does, and then do lots of overheads. Like, it's because it's sports-like already, right?
And you're not missing anything because, oh, look, his tires are green, and that means he gets +2 to brake acceleration or something, whatever.
Right.
You also don't have those weird things going on, which also makes it very accessible. Actually, that's why fighting games are watchable. I usually, if there's something on YouTube that's like, watch these two great guys play fighting game, I'll watch it because it's usually only a 5-minute video.
Right. Plus, it's
and it's these exciting. Guys in this plane. I watched an excited little one. Yeah. One guy, it was a Mortal Kombat 11 game. It was something recent. So I guess they had I don't know what their tournaments are called. It was a big one, Evo or something like that. And like one guy countered another guy, and that guy countered the other thing and then dodged. And it was very readable, but very quick. And I was like, whoa, these guys are amazing. This is awesome to watch. Even if I never played Mortal Kombat, I'm like, it's very visually easy to read. And so I think MOBAs will be around for a while because on the whole, even though there's a lot of nuanced stuff in there, they're still pretty visually easy to watch.
I think I agree. Thanks for your email. That came to us again from Tight Scrote Walker. And you could be like him. Go to the website, frogpants.com/core is the little contact link. You hit that and you can contact us and we would love to hear from you. I think that's going to do it for the show. You can also leave us voicemails, 801-471-0462. You hear that trolley Twitch guy that called in earlier? You can just leave us a voicemail, and then I can just proper ignore it. But everybody else, we'd love to hear from you and play it on the show. So send us your emails, your voicemails rather, 801-471-0462. You can find us on Twitter at CorePod. John's not here, but you can still follow him on Twitter. He'll be back next week, by the way. John_Jagger. You'll find Bo at Bo Schwartz. I'm at Scott Johnson. And you can find the rest of the show's stuff over at frogpants.com/core. Now, one really important note. This show is brought to you by you guys at home, who like what we do. You like our content. So you throw us a little bit of change over at patreon.com/core show. Yep, that's right. patreon.com/core show. Do you want your own physical Dear Martha letter sent to you in the mail, handwritten by John? Oh, but I have good news for you then, because we do that very thing at a certain level in our Patreon. But even if you're like, man, I just want to give a buck to these guys, you totally can, and we'd appreciate it. patreon.com/core show. Bo, any wild, awesome ideas you have to leave the people before we hang up on them? Anything at all?
Just beware of the time barf.
Beware of the time barf. Oh, yeah, and tune into There Will Be Dungeons this Saturday and see how that goes, because, man, things got weird in a good way.
Two words. Time barf.
Time barf. That's gonna do it for us. Thank you all for listening, watching. Stick around for games. We're gonna be playing tonight, and we're gonna have a little guest with us. Tyler Lansdowne will be with us as well. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
No, I forgot to play this again.
That's a good question.
I keep leaving it for the last. It's supposed to be for emails.
Ooh, lesbians.
Dang it.